Welcome to the Creativity Cafe for the creatively adventurous and the relentlessly curious.
We have inspiring conversations with creative women from all over the world.
I'm Paige Baldwinando, and I'm a creativity coach who helps people maximize their creative potential, and I'm also a writer.
And I'm Jordana Matsuda. I'm an illustrator on my creative journey, with Paige helping me along the way.
We're both long-term residents of Japan, a country bursting with creative energy that inspires us every day.
So go grab a cup of tea and join us in discovering new creative landscapes here on the Creativity Cafe.
Hello, Jordana.
So I want to ask something.
All right, bring it.
Have you ever felt at any point in your life where you're just sort of coasting through life on autopilot?
Oh, yeah.
Tell me about it. When was that? Tell me about this time of your life.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think that it can happen at various times in our lives, right? When there might be like some kind of external stress that we're under, or there might be like just some kind of disconnection from life and the way we like to live for some reason or another. For me, very often that autopilot place has come from being so stressed by external factors that I just could not be as attentive to my own internal experience. So, like, I can remember, for example, as a teenager, when I was trying to get through high school and trying to like get into a good university and like do all that stuff, I don't think we, you know, well, maybe some people do, but like, I think it's really hard to remember how much stress kids are under in that situation. Like, even, you know, as long ago as this was the mid 90s, I found it very stressful. And I can remember just kind of like being on autopilot and like going through my life, like, okay, I have to do this. And this is the next thing and the next thing and the next thing, just get it done, you know?
Yeah.
And another time I definitely felt like that was when my children were small, and just physically, the level of work that there is when you have babies. And I had two at the same time. My kids are 18 months apart. And so when my daughter was born, my son was a toddler, and just in that place where, you know, when like you still need to be on them all the time, like watching them every second.
Yeah, more so when they're toddlers, hey?
Totally. He was very much in that kind of place. And I had a newborn at the same time. And that, you know, for years, I think until she turned three, basically, it was just so incredibly stressful that I didn't have the time or the energy or the wherewithal to be attentive to my life, to like my inner life. You know, I was just getting up and doing the things I had to do, and doing the laundry and folding it and making the food and, you know, wiping snotty noses and like all the stuff you have to do, right? And then falling into bed at night again and again and again and again over the course of years. Yeah. How about you? Have you ever felt that experience of just being on autopilot? Yeah.
Well, like, as I'm listening to you, I'm thinking like maybe there's times in life that we need to be in autopilot, though.
Yeah.
I wonder, you've described two situations where you, like, external things were so pressing or stressful that you had to focus on only that.
Like, yes.
You need that autopilot function to get through it. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
I'm wondering that now. Like, I always feel like autopilot is kind of like, feels like a negative thing.
Mm-hmm.
But then maybe sometimes those times of stress through caring or through studying, we need that autopilot function to get through it.
Right.
What do you think, though? What do you think about
that? Yeah, I think you're right. Certainly in the way society is structured now, which also brings up the question of, like, is this the way it should be structured, if that's what we need to do?
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? Like, how do we break that? Like, does, like, autopilot and Do we need to break that structure in order for life to be more fulfilling during those, you know, times of, you know, different levels of pressure or different heightened, you know, areas of our lives? That's a good one as well. Yeah, I don't like, when I think about autopilot for me, kind of similar to you, I think when I had my son, because it was all so new and overwhelming, I think definitely there was that autopilot daily grind, just like getting through the day. Which sounds awful, doesn't it? But like, you know, motherhood, the picture of motherhood versus the reality of motherhood is quite different. So
that's right.
Just even accepting the reality versus the dream kind of took a while to get through as well. I'm sure every mother can relate to that. So I think for me, like, I think that autopilot for myself was kind of useful, but maybe for my son, I was less present because of that. Looking back.
Necessarily so, for your system to function through it. Yeah.
But like you say, like, so much is put on like productivity, be it, you know, studying hard to get into university, getting everything done as a mother. Like, there's such a high expectation put on each part of our lives that, you know, we have to maybe put part of ourselves into autopilot.
Yeah. And it does. It, to me, it really raises this question of like, so if that's what we have to do, maybe we need to think about restructuring this way of doing things, you know. Mothering in isolation is not the way the human animal is meant to do it, right? We are not made for that. And yet, you know,
here we are.
And, you know, it's also like learning is fun. Learning is fun. Humans like to do it. We are driven to do it. We're curious. We're engaged. We're interested. But when the joy is sapped from it and we're doing it in this like mechanistic way that pushes us to the brink of what we're capable of, you know, and I don't mean that in a positive way, because sometimes there's something that can like engage us to the point where we're like so interested that we're, you know, at our edge. You know, our edge of curiosity, or our edge of engagement, or our edge of like what we're able to do. That's not what I mean. What I mean is like this way of just being, you know, sapped by the structure of the system that we're in. I think it's worth questioning those systems and why we keep using them, why we keep engaging in them. So like, I think the place we're coming to from the, in this conversation is that autopilot is essentially survival. So yeah, like, I think the place we're coming to in this conversation is how autopilot is essentially a survival skill, going on autopilot, right? Like, coming to this place of like, I just have to get through it. I just have to get through it, right? And, you know, maybe that's not serving us as human creatures or as beings who... when we are living best, right? Like when we're living in that way that we want to live, where we're connected and engaged and enjoying life, which means we're most creative also. Those are the times that we have the room and the space to do that. And it's also the times that we serve humanity best, really.
It's like, true. Like when we have that space, the autopilot function just melts away, doesn't it? Like, we can just actually think about where and do things in a more meaningful way.
And that's what's so interesting about today's guest, right? Like,
Karen
Ricks, who we're speaking to today, is someone who has built her life in such a way that she is able to engage on a moment by moment basis to notice, okay, what's working and what's not? What do I want to do and what do I not want to do? What's going to work for my family and what won't? What feels good right now?
Yep.
And that, to me, that's the opposite of autopilot.
Yes, definitely.
Did you feel inspired by this conversation?
Yeah, like I was really moved by certain parts of the conversation and just, the she made those decisions. Like she lives her life so boldly and thinks carefully about what she does, but, you know, honors that kind of that pull to something, you know, exciting or something that will be more enriching for her family. And that's just, it's amazing to listen to her story. And it definitely gave me, you know, as someone who lives overseas and who loves traveling, gave me that glimmer of hope that, oh, maybe I can do that one day too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's so inspiring the way she lives her life and the way she expresses herself about living her life.
Yep.
So yeah, let's have a listen to our conversation with Karen. As a world schooler, a chef, and a yoga instructor, Karen Ricks weaves learning into everything she does. Having lived in over a dozen countries on four continents as she educates, cooks, and soaks up her own learning, Karen's work intertwines the cultures she comes into contact with and honors their roots and their variety. Play takes a prominent role in all she does, bringing the joy that's inherent in learning to the very forefront of her work. Welcome, Karen.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yes, we're happy you're here.
Yeah.
I'm excited to be here. And I love that you incorporated a couple of my favorite words into the bio even. Play and joy.
Yes. We love those.
Yeah, they're my favorite words too. Joy. Yes. Love, yeah. So we ask all of our guests the same question to start off with, as it always is very interesting. So, Karen, what's your first memory of doing something creative?
Oh, my goodness. I laugh because as I look back on some of the things that I used to do as a child, like even my siblings will say, oh, well, yeah, it's obvious that you were always going to work with food. It was never obvious to me, but of course, you know, yeah, hindsight is 20/20. One of the first early kind of creative sort of things I remember doing, I was only maybe 6 or 7 years old, and I went to a friend's house to play, and she had an easy bake oven, and they were all the rage, but I didn't have one of my own, and I had seen the commercials, and I wanted so much to be able to do that kind of thing. And so we put together the most completely horrific, inedible meal. And we had such a good time playing with this easy bake oven. But we had actually started off with the idea of making milkshakes. And then we transitioned into what we thought was going to be something like more of an omelet.
We
really just let our creativity run away with it. And so things like fresh fruits ended up in some sort of a batter-like mixture with eggs and ham. And
oh, wow.
Yeah.
That sounds innovative.
It was definitely creative. I can call it that. But it was exactly the sort of experimentation that was shocking for me as a child, because I realized that just because two things taste good separately doesn't mean they necessarily go well together.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And that's the sort of novel kind of discovery that is really best arrived at of your own accord and not, you know, with someone telling you don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't know about you, but I'm the sort of person that when somebody tells me don't do something, well, my first question is, well, why not?
Yes. Yeah.
So exactly. I can't think of anything else except, well, what happens if you do that? And why shouldn't you do that? And so I want to try that. In fact, now that I say that, I think of another childhood memory, which I thought of as creativity at the time. But I was a relatively early reader and writer. And so I was in my kindergarten class and we were sitting at a desk practicing numbers. And I already knew how to write all of the numbers. So this was just a boring, busy work kind of activity. And we got to the number 8 and the teacher specifically said to make sure that we made one continuous serpentine pattern from top to bottom, curving around to the right and back up to the left, and not to make two circles, one on top of the other. And like I said, having done this for a while now, I had never written the number 8 with two circles, one on top of the other. And so I thought, well, I hadn't thought of the number 8 that way. What happens if you make two circles? So I immediately went to drawing the two circles exactly like the teacher had just said not to do. And when she came around and she looked and she said, Karen, I said not to do that. And I just looked right at her, you know, completely honestly. And I said, well, but I'd never done that before. And so I wanted to know what it felt like.
I love that story.
Yeah.
And that's your curiosity.
Yeah.
I really was. I was just curious. She said something that opened up a different way of thinking, a new perspective that I hadn't considered. And so I needed to explore that. And once I had done it, I was like, ew, that feels weird and wrong. And that's not the number 8. And so I didn't want to do it anymore. But we could have.
At least you knew. You know,
exactly. And because I had explored that for myself and come to that decision of my own accord, then, you know, there was no reason for me to continue to pursue it.
Yes.
And so I'm grateful, though, that I was in a place where I was surrounded by adults that I guess were more understanding of that as a young child, because I really credit teachers like that and my mother especially for really encouraging that sort of curiosity and that creative exploration of my curiosity, because without that kind of foundation, I would not be the person that I am right now.
Right. Yeah. And I think it's so, go ahead, Jill.
I was going to say, I think because as adults, I think it's so easy to forget those things. It's easy to forget not knowing what different things taste like if you combine them, how they would taste bad, or how to write things. So having adults around you that don't force you into a certain way is so important, isn't it? To allow you to have that space.
It really and truly is, because when we remind ourselves that not everyone else around us has had the benefit of the same lived experiences, then I feel like we can really approach one another with greater compassion and curiosity so that we can understand one another.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think what you're saying too is such a, like a beautiful reminder that we can trust children, but all humans, to experiment and play and see what happens and learn without being forced or pushed, like just driven by their own curiosity. Humans will learn.
Exactly. Yes. Exactly. That is our natural state. We as human beings are naturally curious.
Yeah.
And we have a desire to learn. And that is something that is really, really hard to shut off.
Yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, a testament to how hard it is to shut off is how hard people have to try when they are in a school setting, for example. It takes a lot of effort, actually, to turn off the curiosity of children and to force compliance.
Yeah. Right, right.
And yet,
which is why I'm an advocate for not even trying.
Right.
Yes.
Well, and that leads us into the next question, which is, you know, I know that you're doing world schooling, which just the word itself makes me like almost salivate with like glee and
Yes.
excitement. But yeah, I'm so interested to hear more about like how your path towards what you're doing today as and all the gloriously creative things you are doing with your life. Will you tell us more about how you got here?
Sure. Well, let's start with that term, world schooling, because I was doing it long before I had ever even heard that word or stumbled into the wild and wonderful community of people who are embracing this as a way of life. So for me, for our family, we really define world schooling as learning from every lived experience, every person that we meet, every place that we go, every activity in which we find ourselves engaged is an opportunity to learn. And so the whole world is our classroom. And we happen to be privileged to be nomadic world schoolers. So we have spent the past 6 plus years kind of wandering the world freely, moving from place to place, staying anywhere from, a few weeks or a month up to a year in any given location. And so we have crisscrossed continents and literally circled the globe a time and a half or so, living in lots of different places and many different community languages, and really having a chance to learn literally everywhere we go in the world. And it's just such a blessing to be able to live such a creative existence.
Will you tell us some of the places you have been? Because just for my own, like, I get so excited by this kind of thing. I'm
Yes,
curious.
sure. Well, my husband and I were born and raised in the United States, and we were actually married for 7 years before we decided to do this really weird and unconventional thing. And we packed up what we were doing in the US and we moved to Japan. And at the time, this was back in 2007, people told us we were absolutely off our rockers. We didn't know anybody who had done anything remotely like what we were doing. Like I said, we were already adults in the middle of our careers and left that behind to, I actually followed my husband who wanted to teach. And so it was going to be just for 1 year, maybe two, if we really, really liked it. And we ended up building this whole unexpected life in Japan over the course of a decade. We had our son there in Japan, founded an international Montessori school, really kind of became just anchors in within our foreign resident community, within our local community in Nagano Prefecture. And then one day we did something else really wild and crazy. We sold it all and we picked up and we moved to Italy because I had gotten this incredible opportunity at a cooking school. So yeah, we sold everything to go to Italy so that I could go to cooking school. And while we were there, we had intended to stay longer than just a few months. Another opportunity opened up in London. So we moved to the UK, and then another opportunity in Mexico. And we realized at this point that we were in a place in our lives, in our work, where we could continue to move, to shift, to travel around the world indefinitely, if that was what we chose to do. And as I said, in this process, we discovered that there was a whole like it felt like this discovering this underground community mm-hmm. of people who had the same kind of weird itchy feet like we did mm-hmm. and wanted to keep traveling and moving and learning and exploring. And so we have been back to Italy on a few different occasions. We have been to Australia and New Zealand. We were blessed to be able to return to Japan about a year after we left to revisit friends and do some other really incredible things. I was invited to be a special guest chef in a couple of different restaurants. And we have spent some time in Mexico on multiple occasions. And we are back in Europe right now. We have had the opportunity to bounce around the Balkans a bit. And so I am talking to you now from Tirana, which is the capital of Albania in Eastern Europe. And I always preface that by reminding people that I did say Tirana, Albania, Eastern Not- Europe. Yep. Because nobody expects it. Right. I have a lot of friends, family, clients in the United States who hear Alabama,
right,
Atlanta,
Toronto.
So, yes.
Yeah, and I thought it was Toronto.
Right. So we're in the capital of Albania, which is Tirana. And Albania is located directly east of the Adriatic Sea from the heel of Italy's boot. So we're just north of Greece, and we have had the most amazing time exploring a lot of countries here in the region, like Greece and Macedonia and Kosovo. And it's just a really remarkable experience, and we're excited to be back in this region again after some time in North America last year.
It sounds just so exciting and exhilarating.
Well, it really is. It is, like I said, it's such a privilege to be able to move around the world the way that we do. I don't think that, you know, we're just on vacation, you know, constantly, you know, swinging hammock and yeah. Sipping umbrella drinks on the beach, which is fun. I absolutely love doing that. But it's also really hard to be able to see your laptop screen with the glare of the sun off of, you know, white sand and rippling waves. So
you do have to occasionally retire back to the indoor.
Yeah.
So I imagine for a lot of people, it's really hard for them to wrap their heads around how you live as a family.
Oh, absolutely. Mm. I could not have imagined myself when we set out from Japan a little over 6 years ago that we would be living this way. I would have been hard pressed to locate Albania on a map myself. But it's one of the ways in which I feel like we continue to spread our creative wings and redefine the ways in which we choose to live our lives and expand upon our work and learn and grow as human beings. Mm-hmm. It's really, I like to say that, you know, we didn't just start thinking or living outside of the box, but we smashed the box and had a big bonfire. Now we're dancing in the light of the flames.
Oh, I love that.
Yes.
Well, and it really is a creative act on a daily basis, right?
Absolutely.
Like anyone who has even traveled, even for like 2 weeks, if you've traveled, right, you know that just being in a place that you're unfamiliar with is creative because you don't know what's going to happen. You don't know what's around the next corner. You don't know what someone is saying to you. You know, there is this inherently almost like rawness to your experience of reality because you cannot numb yourself to it. You cannot go on autopilot because it's not possible.
It's not possible. Every single day is a new and exciting adventure. And that's part of what I love about it. Mm-hmm. No 2 days are the same. And there's so much new to learn and discover, not just about the world and the people around me, but about myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that is endless, isn't it? Because as you're coming up against different cultures and different ways of thinking and being, it's a reflection for you of yourself in a way too. There's a Rorschach test element to it where you're learning about yourself every moment of that kind of experience.
Exactly. And as an educator and a lifelong learner myself, it's such a wonderfully deep and endless and boundless process, because I can't, you know, go to some bookstore or library and find the manual.
Yeah.
That's the book that only I can write for myself.
Mm-hmm.
And no one else can do that work for me.
Mm-hmm. Which is so cool. Right.
Yeah, it's so powerful. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And how amazing for your son to not only experience it, but have two parents who are walking this life with such confidence and, you know, sense of curiosity and exploration. That's just, you know, amazing for him, I'm sure.
Well, some days I'm sure he would say that, and there are other days and he's just like, eh,
not so much.
It is what it is. But again, it's, I take that as a sign that we're doing exactly what we've always intended to do as parents, which is to create the sort of childhood from which he doesn't have to recover as an adult, to really grow up in the knowledge and confidence that he is an amazing human being who doesn't have to conform to the world's or even our expectations of who he should be and what he should do.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And what a gift. There is no greater gift that we can give our children than the confidence and the awareness that they are allowed to be who they are as they are. Mm-hmm. And also, you're modeling for them that whatever comes up, it's handleable. You can do it. You can figure it out. Watch us as we do it. Help us do it. You know, all of that together, you know, is something that is just going to be baked into his experience of life and his understanding of how life is.
Well, that's the plan.
Yeah.
Again, that's part of, you said a couple of important words there. Really, we can do it and us, and, you know, we'll figure it out. This idea of homeschooling, unschooling, world schooling, they're educational terms that adults often think are applied and directed at children.
Right.
But I remind people all the time, we are on this wild and wonderful world schooling journey together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is not just the way that we teach our child. This is the way that we live our lives. And everything, it's all about learning and growing for all of us, not just the youngest member of our family.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
It's beautiful.
Yeah. So Karen, you love to express your creativity through food. I've seen all your wonderful photos on Instagram. So how does the traveling you do and the food you make relate to each other?
Oh, goodness. Food is so intimately and organically linked to place, but also to the people and the cultures in which it's developed. And so I love that I have the privilege of getting to know different types of ingredients and the various combinations and techniques with which people bring them together in so many different parts of the world. It's such a delicious way to learn that I start salivating every time I think about all of the, you know, wild and wonderful ways that I get to explore the flavors of a place and of the cultures that reside in it. And it's also really cool because the things that I learn, the techniques, the combinations, the experiences, the vocabulary around it are something special that I get to take with us every new place that we go. And that's great for me, especially because it doesn't take up space in our luggage. So we have the opportunity to both really be present in a time and in a space, but also really crisscross the sort of arbitrary lines on a map that have defined, you know, what is supposed to be, you know, this particular country or this particular people's space. Because, you know, people cross borders and their culinary traditions can follow and fuse together in the most unique and delicious ways. And I love that I get a chance to express creatively who I am and my unique mix of lived experiences in the foods and the fusions of those foods that I'm able to teach and share with people around the world.
It's so exciting. Just even to hear about it is exciting. Yeah. So one of the things that I think is so interesting about, you know, one of the things we do in U.S. American food culture is this blending of different differently sourced food, like foods from different cultures and different areas of the world, putting them together in interesting and innovative ways is something that I really miss about being in the United States.
Yeah.
And I wonder what you think about that.
Oh, I love the mixing and the blending and the fusing, even just the ability to create a meal where we can enjoy a combination of things from different parts of the globe. You know, after 10 years in Japan, having things like a simple bowl of steamed white rice or miso soup are just really basic kinds of foundational things that we enjoy on a regular basis. And so having something like that with scrambled eggs,
yeah.
or a breakfast burrito,
yeah,
right,
is one of those kinds of eclectic mixes in a meal that is really, it really speaks to who we are as a family, where we constantly have, you know, a foot in one part of the globe and another foot in a different one. And again, it's such a marvelous privilege to be able to draw upon these different culinary traditions and for them to speak so clearly and authentically to our hearts, to who we are and what we desire.
Mm-hmm. That's so beautifully put. Absolutely. So I have this question for you that arose from my viewing of your Instagram, which I love, by the way. I love your Instagram. And in a post earlier this year, you captioned this just gloriously joyful photo of yourself with the words, "My Black is beautiful. My joy is revolutionary." And I just couldn't agree more. Will you tell us more about what inspired that extraordinary photo, which is such a beautiful photo of you? Just standing in this amazing purple dress looking just for all the world,
beautiful.
Like you are exuding pure joy.
Yes.
What inspired that photo and that caption?
Oh, well, thank you. The photo actually came about through the most unlikely series of circumstances. I've been seeing flying dress photos for years across social media.
Mm.
And some of the first ones I remembered seeing were from people taking tours in Greek islands like Mykonos and stuff. And I remember thinking, oh yeah, one of these days. And lately, whenever I find myself doing that, I try to remember to stop, take a deep breath, and then look at a calendar and say, which day on the calendar is numbered one of those?
Oh, nice.
Because the very life that we lead right now would never have happened if I had, you know, brushed off that idea of, you know, going to cooking school in Italy by saying, oh yeah, that would be really nice one of these days. And instead I actually submitted an application. Or if my husband, who had wanted to teach in Japan, had just said, oh yeah, it'd be nice one of those days. Mm-hmm. It was about, no, we see an opportunity and you schedule it and you work toward it and you make it happen.
Yeah.
So last year, my family and I spent a significant amount of time in Mexico. And the photo that you're talking about is up on a hill near the Pipila Monument in Guanajuato, which is in central Mexico, just a little ways north of Mexico City. And for a couple of years, actually, since January of 2020, my family and I had been planning to get together with this group of world schoolers in what has been an annual summit, this gathering of families who, you know, educate in this sort of weird outside the box method that we do. And so my friend Lainey, who's been organizing these summits all over the world for the last, I don't know, 6-8 years, something like that, had encouraged us. We were like finally on the same continent at the same time. She's like, come to Mexico. So we went to Guanajuato specifically to attend this World Schooling Summit. And, you know, the last few years from, you know, COVID and travel restrictions and illnesses and losing people, it had been filled with so much more trauma for the world as a whole. Yeah. But for us, our time in Mexico was really an opportunity not only to reconnect with the community in person that we have connected with online for so long, but it was an opportunity to rest and recover from a lot of that trauma. And that photo shoot was really at the insistence of my dear friend who connected me with a photographer who said, you know, just come and play and just do this thing just for you. And so as I, you know, gathered up this lengthy lavender train and sent it flying out into the wind, it was really, I'm so glad that you say that the joy comes across in the photo, because that's really what it was. It was an expression of lightness and freedom and joy at being able to sort of return to the happy, energetic, outgoing person that I most desire to be.
That's so beautiful. Yeah. It really does come across in the photo, and it comes across too in the way you express yourself, your passion for life and your joy in what you do and how you do it is part of your creativity, and how it feels, how it comes across, at least to me, is so powerful.
Well, I appreciate that. It's really been a conscious effort to honestly cultivate a different sort of storytelling. I think the realization for me has really come steadily, especially over the last couple of years, with watching how people in the United States specifically, but around the world too, have started to look at movements like Black Lives Matter or the celebration of Black History Month. We see that historically, Black people in general have been constantly defined by this shared trauma. And unfortunately, that means there's this constant projection of oppression, of trauma, of the horrors of this past that was inflicted on us, that people anticipate must therefore define us forever moving forward. And so when I say that my joy is revolutionary, it's an acknowledgement of the shock, the surprise, the just completely unexpected way in which people approach me as a Black woman, as a middle-aged parent, as a global traveler. It's as if that's not what you're supposed to be. That's not what I was taught. So I was not expecting that. And from that shock and from that surprise, we have this amazing opportunity to connect on a completely new level, to see just how much of our shared experiences really unite us, and the ways in which we can continue to learn from one another and to grow together in understanding.
I love that. Yeah. And that, you know, the reclamation of the joy, that element is so powerful. It's just so powerful to everything that you've done with your life that you've told us about today speaks to this active seeking and active taking of opportunities that come across your path, but also that you seek out. You know, you're doing both. You are seeking and claiming. And that just feels so powerful in terms of like tapping into your own power, using your own power to live the life you want to live.
Absolutely. And I see that as really a core of this ancestral creativity that I'm able to not only tap into, but to really live out loud in a manner that invites everyone else to do the same. The last few years have really shown us on a global scale that there's so much that was happening in the world that was simply unsustainable.
Yeah.
And we have to look at completely different ways of living and being moving forward. And so the surprising way in which I and my family have the privilege of living our lives really is an opportunity, I feel, for especially for people who look like me, for people who don't see themselves represented in popular media around the world, to be able to think bigger, to dream more boldly, to imagine something that previously was considered impossible.
Yeah.
To see that our education from its very foundations in childhood should be expansive rather than narrowing. Mm-hmm. That we ought to be able to look at ways in which to really live and be our best selves and figure out how does that contribute to the world around us and explore that and grow into becoming that best version of ourselves that can contribute to the betterment of everyone around us.
I love that.
Yeah. I think like sharing your story and like everything you share through social media, just of being able to see what you, how you're living your life and all the explorations that you're making around the world, it just inspires people who maybe they have an inkling, but they're a bit too scared to do the things that you're doing. It helps them to realize, oh, I can actually do that if I wanted to. Like,
yes,
I don't have to stay where I am. There are other options. Because imagine if you were living your life that you are, but you weren't sharing it. Like, yeah. Oh, that yes. would just be so sad for so many people. Like, you know, just listening to you today, I feel at certain points so emotional thinking,
what if, you know, because, you know, we are all living outside of our home countries, so we have an inkling of what you're doing now. And it just, yeah, it makes me want to try something different, try something new, and yeah,
yay,
smash that box up a bit, even
exactly.
if it's just in the corner for now.
Yes. Yeah. Well, and that's exactly the point. Mm. Honestly, there are days when it's just exhausting, and I think, why would I bother? You know, I don't need to post anything. Nobody's paying attention. And so I appreciate the sort of feedback that you're sharing with me today, because it's a reminder that even when I can't see how people are engaging with or responding to or taking in and understanding the things that I share, it's having an impact beyond what I can see and feel immediately on a day-to-day basis. And I truly feel like that is a core part of who I am as an educator and what God has put me on this earth to do. Mm. It's that it's not just about, you know, what I can personally learn and do. I mean, otherwise, you know, I can go off and live my life and never share anything. Mm. And, you know, that would be all well and good. But the fact is that I have been blessed with this unique set of circumstances that can maybe inspire somebody else to be bold enough to step out on a path that they may be considering but aren't quite sure of, or might be a little fearful or trepidatious about embarking on. And so it's a real honor for me to be able to just live my life out loud and inspire others to do the same, and to be able to guide other people on that journey of exploration, to take them from this place of, I think I might want to try to learn or grow or do something different, but I don't know how, to being able to live that. And that's the privilege that I have as an educator, whether it's, you know, talking people through how to create a meal that they've always wanted to try, or as a yoga instructor, guiding people through the movement of their body and their breath and their mind so that they can better connect with who they are on a deeper level and explore this joyful movement that can give them the self-confidence to be that person that they desire to be.
Totally. Yes. And actually, I was going to ask you about that with yoga too, because my experience with yoga was for so many years, like, that's not for me, because all I ever saw was thin people. And I was not a thin person, you know, and it was like, oh, that's not for me then, you know, I'm not represented and I'm not welcome in those spaces, was how it very often felt. I would go into a yoga studio and it would be like Mean Girl Central. Like, what are you doing here? You know,
And like, exactly. And that's exactly why I enjoy sharing photos of me, you know, standing on my head or on my hands or sitting in the lotus position somewhere. because again, popular media doesn't show people in large bodies practicing yoga, even though we do.
We do.
Popular media doesn't tend to show, you know, Black women with their natural hair sitting in, you know, these beautiful spots around the world, living and enjoying life. But we do. Here we are. And so really being able to be that voice, that image of the underrepresented, to say, this can be you too. All are welcome here, is really, really important to me. It's important for me not just to say it and not just to do it, but as I said, to live it out loud, to share that with my child and all of the children like him who, you know, don't necessarily have that at their front door. It might not be something that they see within their general geographic space. I feel like we are so incredibly blessed to have these resources literally at our fingertips, where we don't have to even live on the same continent or in the same time zone to be able to share and learn from these experiences of other people, and to know that something exists out there that might be different from what I see here in front of me in face-to-face interactions on a regular basis, but that doesn't mean that it's inaccessible to me.
Yes, absolutely. That's right. And I think that that is also something that, you know, and I'm sorry to bring it back to like, but I've been thinking a lot about Americanness today mm-hmm. for some reason. And I think that that is something that we culturally have cultivated in a way that feels to me very inspiring, the innovation, right? And this, like, I can do what I want with my life, actually. And yes. there's something in our, like, sort of cultural personality that we bring to the world that, you know, I've had a lot of moments in my life of feeling less than appreciative of certain aspects of our culture. But
sure.
the moments where I appreciate us most are in these places of innovation that, as you're talking, it feels to me, I feel an affection for our shared nationality. Because,
absolutely.
You know what I mean?
I do. I absolutely do. I come back to this on a regular basis as well, because it is, I feel, both a privilege and a responsibility traveling on this little blue passport.
Yes.
But one of, I'll just say one of my unique pleasures as a traveler is in smashing stereotypes. Mm-hmm. And when people approach me and I open my mouth to speak, my English very clearly identifies me as yeah. having been born and raised in the United States.
Yeah.
That's without a doubt. But it's fun to watch the surprise and often confused looks on people's faces when English isn't the only language
yes.
that I speak.
Okay, yes.
And when I have the opportunity to share with them some of the things that I've learned in my travels, or especially here in Albania, because this is not the first time that we've lived here, when I can communicate with an Albanian about Albanian culinary traditions with which they themselves might not be familiar. Mm. Because I love diving into some of the traditional food ways here. And I have learned how to make some of the things that, you know, people take for granted. If it's easily available at every little corner store or whatever, you don't have to learn how to make it yourself necessarily.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
being able to shock and surprise people in that way. Yeah. Not only is it fun for me, but it's also a great way for me to help just kind of shake things up around the world and shake up mm. people's perspectives about what that Americanness is. Because just like, you know, their perceptions when they might first see me as a big Black woman, I'm a lot more, there's yes. a lot more to this mm-hmm. than what meets the eye initially.
Yes. It's and fun and exciting. Are. That's
it
right.
Is.
Yeah. It's fun it and exciting is. To do that. It really is. And, you know, it's, there's this, its own joy too inherent in that. At least for me, there has very often been this, glee almost in like just subverting expectations, right?
Yes.
And like, especially as Americans, we are very often and I would say Brits too, would you say so, Jordana? Like, they're all Anglophones, native Anglophones. We are often construed to be monolingual, like yes. people just assume yeah, that we are monolingual, and when we are not, it is an interesting surprise for many people.
Absolutely. And it's even funnier for me when I've had an opportunity to speak with someone like on the phone first.
Yes.
And then they see me, because then I'm really surprise. Not what they expect.
Yeah. That reaction is always priceless, isn't it?
It It's so
It's
fun.
hilarious. I remember the first time someone came to my school in Japan and they had called to set their appointment over the phone. And my business manager had been involved in another meeting or something. So I had taken the call and I was giving them the directions to pull into our parking lot before coming into the building. And then they arrived at the school and they were welcomed in and they saw me. And there was such confusion, they really thought they must have been in the wrong place at
Wow.
first.
Yeah.
But
It's
it was a
amazing.
pleasant surprise for them. And it was actually a really great marketing tool because they thought, well, wow, if this Black American woman can, speak Japanese, then maybe she can teach my child something. So.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And that's also fun too, isn't it? It's like, don't underestimate me,
Exactly. And that's the point of all of it, though, is that we all have something surprising to
Yes.
learn from one another, and that we can teach other people from our perspectives, from our lived experiences, simply by nature of the fact that they're different from one another.
Yeah.
And those differences are exciting and unique and surprising and enlightening and just amazing.
Yeah. And so fun to explore.
And I think often, like when we come up, when we do break like the expectation or stereotype of that other person, it also creates a sense of unity or sense of unity is not the right word, but it gives you a new thing to talk about. It gives you a new way to connect with each other that you might not have been able to do had you, met under different circumstances. And I think that's what I always love is that initial shock then kind of turns to a conversation, which turns to laughter, which turns to, whatever what it ends up being. But I do love that aspect of like different cultures communicating in interesting ways.
Yes. It creates unexpected ways for us to connect on deeper levels. And that's really what has been the most exciting part of our world schooling journey as a family. I never would have believed before we set out how deep the connections would be that we could create with people from such seemingly different backgrounds. People with whom, on the surface, maybe we don't have that much in common. And yet, some of our shared interests, some of the things that are so much deeper than surface level, we wouldn't get to know them otherwise, have been the sorts of things that have bonded us to, my neighbors with whom, we don't have a shared first language. Or, to people halfway around the world that are as close as family that I might have known or seen and gotten to know in person for just a couple of weeks. And yet we have created these really deep and meaningful and lasting connections.
Yeah, it's beautiful. And I think, what you're talking about too is it plays into or it ties back into what we were talking about earlier, where, these subverting of expectations is another way of shaking ourselves loose of that autopilot and coming back into awareness of this moment, right? Here we are now.
For sure. Yes. And I love your use of that word autopilot too, because that's what life can sort of feel like, right? When you get into a routine, you get into your rut, you go here, you go there
For
on a
sure.
daily basis, things just kind of get boring. And I think one of the things that I enjoy about moving as frequently as we do into such different places around the globe as we have been able to travel is that that gives us an opportunity to very literally and physically move ourselves out of that rut,
Yes,
to
totally.
shake things off and to change things up in a way that we have to see the world from a different perspective.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah. For yeah. Sure.
Yeah, it definitely keeps life interesting.
Yes, it really does. I can hear it. I can vicariously feel it.
So Karen, can you tell us a bit about a project that you're currently working on that, you know, that's lighting you up, what you're up to these days?
Oh my goodness. There are so many things.
Ooh, okay.
Well, I guess a part of it is because I'm such a multi-passionate person. Mm-hmm. It's never just one thing, one aspect of my being or doing that is lighting me up. It's always multiple fronts. So one of the things that I love about food is that it's a constant, you know, every single day. Mm-hmm. So I have the privilege of, you know, creating new and exciting meals and celebrating all of the seasons. And Black History Month has given me the opportunity to dive back into some of my cultural favorites from home and share mm-hmm. some of the unique twists and local ingredients that change it up in mm-hmm. a variety of ways. So diving into some of those soul food cooking workshops have been a lot of fun. And I also have had the privilege of meeting some of my Syrian neighbors recently who are teaching me about their styles of baking sweets.
Oh.
I have such an incurable sweet tooth.
Oh, me too, and me too.
So getting a chance to work with people who are as passionate about food as I am and who are teaching me not just new ways of bringing together pastry and sugar and other deliciousness like that, but also to be able to explore some Arabic, which is a new to me language, mm-hmm. and syllabary writing methods that always excites and stirs the linguist in me.
Yes.
And being able to work as a yoga teacher, not just one-on-one with people, but my desire to connect with future generations of yoga teachers. I have been guiding some up-and-coming yoga teachers through their teacher training, and that is a real privilege and an honor to be able to do that. And I'm working with some of the yogis in that space to design some future yoga / foodie retreats.
Ooh.
In various parts of having the opportunity to get excited about, again, not just living the beautiful life that I have the privilege of leading, but being able to share and invite other people on that journey as well, to explore food, to explore the world, to explore joyful movement.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's one of the things that I'm really excited about too. And then to be able to have recently connected with a writing coach.
Ooh.
And tease out new ways of telling these kinds of stories that we've touched on here in our chat today. I don't know, it could end up being a new book or two, or maybe a podcast. I have no idea where it's going yet, but I'm excited to be able to share in whatever ways the new stories will be able to make their way out into the world.
Oh, that's so exciting. So I'm curious too, when you're creating, when you're doing something and you have an idea in mind of how you would like it to go, and it's just kind of not coalescing in the way you want, or it's not coming together in the way you'd hoped, what are some things that you do to move through any stickiness like that creatively?
Oh, I have found, as we spoke at the beginning, that you know, forcing things just doesn't work for me. And so I like to do things that remind me of who I am and how I experience joy. And that comes in a number of different ways. It might be playing in the water.
Yeah,
I love the water. And had an opportunity recently to spend some time in Macedonia on Lake Ohrid. And so every sunset over the lake, literally jumping in the water and splashing around.
This sounds amazing.
You know, getting it into a boat and, you know, being in, on, or near the water really relaxes me. It reminds me of what it feels like to dive deep into my innermost childlike glee. And it really, I think, gets the creative juices flowing too.
Yeah.
So when I can't be near a big body of water like the lake, or, you know, can't splash in the waves of an ocean, sometimes even just taking a bath helps with that too. And then going to play. I mean, for me, play is, it's again, just part of reconnecting with who I am.
Yeah.
As a childlike individual who's curious and tactile and, you know, enjoying all of the sensory experiences. So I can go for a walk in my neighborhood, and there are so many wonderfully sweet and docile dogs and cats who love to be pet. And I might jump into my kitchen and dig my hands in some dough. I have a baker's meditation, as it were, where I'll knead dough or make pastries or cookies or something like that. And even, I think this doesn't get enough credit in our go, 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 hustle kind of culture sometimes, but just resting.
Yes.
Yes.
You know, I remind my fellow yogis often that sometimes the most challenging thing for us is not to do, but just to be.
Yeah.
And so to rest in Shavasana at the end of an asana practice, it doesn't even have to be something super physical. And I'm really in love with my aerial yoga swing. So to be able to suspend myself in a hammock and lie down and just rock. It is the most soothing, comforting, relaxing, and sometimes really challenging thing to do, to just lie down, turn off the brain, turn off all of the, you know, coulda, woulda, shoulda stuff, and just be.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. You are speaking my language, my friend.
Yes.
I once had a yoga teacher who said, like, Shavasana is the most important pose of all of them.
It really, really is. Because again, it's not about doing, it's about allowing our bodies to really soak up all that we have done, allowing our minds to rest with all of the things that we already have done and just be. You know, when many, many years ago, back when exercise was a thing that I thought I had to do and not something joyful that I wanted to do. And I studied exercise science. And I remembered taking this class where we discussed the fact that rest was the most important part of exercise, because that was the process in which our muscles get a chance to rebuild themselves, to knit, to stitch, to come back together, to take all of the beating and the pounding that we've been doing and build themselves up again to be bigger, stronger, longer, leaner, whatever it is we've been trying so hard to do. So if we never stop to rest, we can never go through that process of rebuilding and recovering and knitting together to incorporate all that we have done.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And also, it's just like part of the natural order of being a living organism. You know, it's the cycle that we need.
It absolutely is. And my husband and I laugh all of the time these days, raising an adolescent, because it's like back to, you know, that toddler stage when I don't need a nap. I'm not tired.
Yeah.
And yet we know, you know, from our grizzled and wizened old perspective of middle age, that at times, you know, when we're just the most, you know, not ourselves, it's because we need to rest.
Yes.
And our bodies, as much as we hate to admit it sometimes, you know, spending a third of our daily hours in a prone position or unconscious or something like that, it might not be something that we like to do, but it is something that we need to do.
Yeah.
And I find that especially for, you know, really driven, you know, type A personalities, like I can be sometimes, the hardest thing to do is to acknowledge that I am at the point where I have done all I can do right now.
Mm-hmm.
And now is the time to stop. That's just as important as the doing. Because if I don't stop, I'm not going to be able to continue and do more later.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And that is actually a really big part of it. There is this like this thing that we forget about, that we're not machines, right? Like
we're not.
Have to stop.
Yes, yes. And it's important for us to remember too that, you know, our physical body is, you know, it's like this shell that is carrying around this incredible consciousness, this unrivaled computer that our brains are. And we don't really fully and truly understand the synergy with which they work.
Mm-hmm.
But in order to, you know, protect and nurture that creativity that we desire so much, we have to take care of our physical bodies too. And that means giving them the opportunity to shut down and recharge so that they can continue to carry us through the next day and the next day.
And it's also then that we can listen to them as, you know, the sources of wisdom that they are themselves too. You know, the body carries so much wisdom and intuition and information for us about our lived experience that when we're going, it's incredibly hard to access.
It really is. And not only is it difficult to access, but we're surrounded by a world that tells us to ignore the information that we're getting anyway. And that's why I reframe yoga and, you know, all exercise as joyful movement, because when we look at it as a way to connect with our physical selves, to get to know who we are and what we like and do more of it, because that's what helps us thrive.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, again, turning on its head this notion that we are machines, that, you know, we're supposed to be productive 23 and a half hours a day. And if we're not, there's something wrong with us.
Right.
That's not who we are as human beings. Yeah. And we can't discover who we are and what lights us up if we don't take the time to connect with ourselves and what we like. And to honestly, sometimes to do that in the absence of all kinds of external stimulation, which is growing more and more difficult these days.
But it's also so satisfying to kind of, you know, give the middle finger to capitalism in the way that way that it's just like, you know what? No, I'm just not going to keep performing. I am a living creature and I want to be a living creature and not, you know, a production machine or a,
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for this conversation, Karen. It's just been such a joy speaking with you.
Yeah, it truly has. I am waiting for your book to come out.
I can't wait.
Because I would love to read it, or podcast, listen to your podcast, whatever it
Anything.
Is.
Anything. you put out.
Yeah.
I appreciate that so much. And in the meantime, you can connect with me across, you know, all different kinds of social media as well. I share snippets of our adventures on Facebook and Instagram. And I have a couple of YouTube channels, one for cooking and one for yoga. And I share bits of the things that we're learning and the various workshops and food tours and coming soon, foodie and yoga retreats.
Yeah.
Exciting.
Those will be on my website as well. And you can just find that at ourkitchenclassroom.com.
Wonderful.
What I'll do as well, I'll put all your links in the show notes. So everyone go have a look and find out what Karen's up to.
Wonderful. Yes. Thank you so much. This has been such a joy to be able to chat with you ladies and to reconnect with that launch pad that Japan was for us and for our family on this incredible journey.
Thank you for everything and have a wonderful day.
Thank you. You too.
Now it's time for our Ask Us Anything section. So this is when we read and answer questions from our listeners about the creative process. So Paige, what's today's question?
All right, this is a great question. It is submitted anonymously, which we also invite. You are welcome to submit anonymously anytime you'd like. Hey, Paige and Jordana, how are you guys? Thanks for sharing so many creative people with us. I love listening and get so inspired by the podcast. As for me, I've been writing a novel for the past few years, and sometimes it goes gangbusters and it feels awesome. But other times, probably most of the time, I hit a wall and just feel completely stuck. It's almost like I'm encased in concrete or something, and I just can't make myself do it. How can I find the discipline to keep writing even when I'm stuck like this? It's a great question.
That sounds right up your page. Right up your street, but I'll cut that bit out. I'll say that again.
Okay.
Oh, that sounds right up your street, Paige. I'm sure you have some suggestions for this listener.
I do. Well, and I just want to say first how just evocative and accurate the image of being encased in concrete can feel.
Oh, really?
When we're stuck like this, no matter what it is, whether it's writing or anything else, right? Like when you're just like, how do I do it though? But how do I do it? It can just feel like so stuck. Have you ever felt like that?
It's interesting. So as you're talking about that, I'm trying to like think about writing versus like painting. Like for me, if I'm stuck, I'll just do a different project, or I'll try and use a different medium, or I feel like there's more versatility. But with writing, there's only one way to do it, isn't there? Like it's words on a paper.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But that's purely from my point of view as a non-writer. So I feel like maybe sometimes it feels more difficult for writers because, you know, there is only one way to write, isn't there, really?
There's a different...
Practically speaking, practically.
Right. Yeah, there's a different, like, moving forward than there is with, like, putting paint on a canvas, for sure, I think. And also, like, I think there's something in what you said that can be really valuable, which is, you know, you can try to do something different, you know, whether it's through the medium of words or a different one. Like if, say, for example, you're a writer, but you also love baking, you know, sometimes just engaging in something totally different that you love and you don't feel any pressure around can help loosen up the creative feelings going forward, you know, like, or it could even be, let's say, you know, you want to write the novel, but there's something else that is just feels a little more compelling to you as a writing project. Like, what if you lean into that? You know, what if you write a poem, or what if you, whatever it is, like that feels, I don't know, write some fan fiction, write some like a blog post, or a Facebook post, or anything, you know, that actually feels lighter and less pressure, like there's less pressure around it.
Yeah.
That can also really.
So like I have a question with the practically how they would do that. So, for example, if the listener was, she sat down to start writing for her novel but couldn't, so instead of starting that, she would try something else? Or, like, is this something you just interweave into your life, or is it something you do instead of, or something you do beforehand?
Mm-hmm.
Like, practically speaking, how would this person connect those two things together?
What I would encourage anyone to do in this kind of situation is to feel into what feels best.
Okay.
Whatever feels intuitively best, try that. You know, when we follow that thread of our own pleasure and our own enjoyment, that is when creativity starts to flow more fully. And in doing that, we also loosen up our own body, you know, the bodily experience, the tightness we have mentally around it. All of that starts to become, you know, less rigid and more fluid. And that's what we're looking for, you know, in this kind of process. And then there's another thing in here that I'd really like to kind of look at, which is this idea of, like, making ourselves do it, you know, or finding the discipline.
Interesting words to choose.
Yeah. I think when we are approaching any project from this kind of standpoint, what can happen, this is not to say it always happens because everyone is different, but if we're finding that this is not working for us, that's probably because in general, this tactic does not work for us. You know, push harder or force more or create more discipline is probably not the way if it's not already working for you. You know, what if the way was something else? You know, what if the way was towards the enjoyment and the pleasure and the fun? Like, I would encourage anyone who's feeling this kind of way to ask yourself, why do I even want to do this project? You know, what made me start this project? What lit me up about it? What got me excited about it? Why do I want it? You know, because you don't have to do it.
You know? Yeah.
You're choosing to do it.
Yeah.
And so when we reconnect with that part of the creative process that's more embedded in enjoyment and fun and playfulness and ease and, like, excitement, that can start to dissolve the feelings of stuckness and move us into something that feels much more alive, you know, and human and enjoyable.
Yeah, because I think for any creative project, sometimes we get overwhelmed with the end result or getting enough done each day, or when we forget, like, the original reason. I think going back, I know for me, going back to why I wanted to do this project always helps me to kind of calm down a bit.
Yeah.
Because I often, I don't get so like that concrete feeling, but I get that, like, panicky, like, flustered feeling. going back to that really helps to calm me down. So I wonder if for the listener as well, just like you said, remembering why did you want to write this book? What is it you wanted to tell people, you know, that might help to release that tension somewhat.
Totally. Yeah. And, you know, I think there's also a place for interacting with it in a different way. You know, like, what if, I don't know, let's say one of the characters is a woodworker or is, like, a ceramicist, or, you know, like, could you go see something that this person, this character, would want to see? Could you?
That's a good idea. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, so to experience through the eyes of a character, if you're doing something like novel writing, could also maybe help you connect with the work in a way that feels, like, reinvigorated and exciting.
Yeah. That's definitely bringing joy into the process, isn't it?
Yeah. Like, fun. Where's the fun?
Yes.
It's the question I always want to ask. I am a fun, you know, loving person. I enjoy anywhere I can find fun. I'm all about it. And I think in the creative process, when we ask ourselves this again, where's the fun in this for me now? Or where could it be? Sometimes we don't feel any at all. Where could it be? Yeah. So thanks so much for this question. We love getting questions from you, and we would love to have more. So please feel free to send us any questions you have on our Instagram account is one way. We are at the Creativity Cafe 21 on Instagram. You are welcome to send us a private message there, and we will happily receive your questions that way. And what are the other options, Jordana?
You can also send us an email. So in the show notes, you will find our email address. So please send your messages there as well if you want to.
Yes. And thank you for listening, everyone. We'll catch you next time.
Thanks for joining us today on the Creativity Cafe.
If you enjoyed today's episode, please leave us a review and share it with your friends.
And follow us on Instagram at thecreativitycafe21 for special updates and sneak peeks behind the scenes.
Catch you again next time. Keep creating.